What's up, everyone? Aaron Nagler here with Cheesehead TV, joined, as always, the day after the game by the Don of the Pack-A-Day podcast and many other things Packers. It's Andy Herman. Andy, how the hell are you?
Hey, doing great. We don't often get a Victory Friday, so enjoying
the Friday's a little bit different, right? Yeah, I'll take it. I'll take a little victory into the weekend. That's a rather nice change of pace, no doubt about it. Now, I'm gonna present you with a challenge here, Andy, because I know that, you know, as someone who we follow this team day by day, we know 30,000 foot view, there's not a ton to take away from this game.
No.
Analysis wise, even narrative wise, simply because we all know the situation. We know how depleted the 49ers were and still are and will be for a while. But what, okay, so my challenge is, other than taking care of business the way you expect them to, if they want to be a contender, which I think is the one thing you can draw from this game, what you got? When you look at this game, what do you see?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. And I think that's why everyone and their mom and myself are all writing about Devontae Adams today, because I think that's the easy takeaway, right? You can't really make much out of a San Francisco 49ers team that's, you know, shadowing as a XFL team on the side. You know, you took care of business and you shouldn't apologize for the win in any way, shape, or form. You take every win that you can get in the National Football League, and especially when you consider that a huge chunk of people on Twitter were convinced that the Packers were still going to get run all over in this game and we're not going to be able to stop it on.
Okay, I mean, I am on Twitter. Let me tell you, I'm not going to say like I expected it, but I was nervous about it. You never really know with this team. So
no, absolutely. I mean, Kyle Shanahan's a fantastic coach, and you can never take those things for granted. And had they lost that game, there would have been pitchforks and everything else surrounding 12-65. So don't apologize for the win. I don't think that you can say, well, you know, everything's fixed on defense and this team's ready to compete for a Super Bowl. Or, you know, I don't think you can take anything away from this game. But they took care of business. They got a win. You had some really great performances. And that's exactly what you wanted to see out of this game.
So with that caveat now put out there, so no one can say for the rest of everything we talk about, yeah, but. There's no yeah, buts here. We understand the prism we are looking through.
Exactly. So
with that said, how encouraged were you by the pass rush showing up? Because it has been a constant theme this year about these guys not arriving at the quarterback with any regularity. That seemed to happen with regularity. Obviously, Niners were down, they're starting left tackle, etc., but it sure seemed like a more active front.
Yeah, cautiously optimistic. The only, you know, thing that I'm slightly concerned about, and again, this is looking at it from the lens that you just mentioned, it seemed like a lot of it came through Justin School, the backup left tackle. That was Preston's pressure where Raven Green got the interception. That was Za'Darius Smith's press, you know, strip sack, I should say. You know, so I'm excited to go back and look at it and see, all right, how much of it was against a backup left tackle. And if had that been Trent Williams, maybe that doesn't happen. Or was this, you know, consistent pressure from a variety of different angles? Cause it looked like McGlinchey got beat on a couple plays. It looked like they did have some pressure on the interior as well. What I really like to see is there was a lot of different plays where Kenny Clark and the defensive line reset the line of scrimmage in the backfield, which was the first time I think I've seen that all season
all
long.
All year long, totally.
With any sort of consistency. So, and that interior of the offensive line, if I'm not mistaken, for the most part was the 49ers
together,
starting group.
Right.
There were some positives to take away one way or the other.
Yeah, and I think it's funny you mentioned McGlinchey because he's a good player. And you saw Gary so close on a couple of snaps against him. I do think Gary's kind of rounding into shape, coming on a little bit. We know he's been dealing with that ankle injury pretty much all year that he aggravated in New Orleans, etc. But it was good to see him at least affecting the pocket. It's something that hasn't happened a whole lot so far this season. What did you think, flipping it over to the offensive side of the ball, how fun was it to watch Aaron Jones just add a breath of fresh air on the offensive side of the ball?
It's amazing how a couple weeks off for Aaron Jones can make you forget exactly how talented he is and how much he can bring to an offense. Cause you know, I don't think there's, you know, any level of, you know, major concern when Jamal Williams is in there. He does everything well. He's exactly what you want as that number two back. But man, when you bring somebody in dynamic in there like Aaron Jones, it just makes a world of difference. And this wasn't even like a virtuoso Aaron Jones performance where he was running for 200 yards and two touchdowns. This was, you know, a 3.9 yard per touch average, but he got a lot of yards that a lot of backs wouldn't even
get. Exactly.
Yeah.
It was interesting. And it's funny you mentioned that because it is funny how, like, he's so dynamic that opening drive.
Yeah.
And then they really limit his touches until, like, the fourth quarter when they're down and they need bodies. So they run him out there. And, of course, the 49ers know they're just running out the clock. So he's running into a wall at that point. Yeah. But yep. to your point, there was one play in particular where it was blocked up to the right and it a hole opens up backside and he just darts through it for a first down. And you mentioned, you know, you love Jamal. He's absolutely fine, but that's a play he doesn't make. That's the vision that Aaron has that very few backs kind of explode through there. And he just does it with seemingly ease, effortlessness, whatever you want to call it. Now,
and it's the total package too, because it's the vision, and then it's the ability to burst through the hole, and then it's the balance through contact as well. For a guy that's built that his size, to see him be able to take hits, he's like a bowling ball at times, how he just pinballs off of people and continues to chug for extra yardage. It's so incredible to see him have that full list of weapons at the running back position that just so few running backs have.
What did you thinking of the weapons at running back? What did you think of Tyler Irvin's performance last night? It was interesting to see him run between the tackles. He was a lot better at it than I was expecting. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think the thing is, I wasn't necessarily surprised at how effective he was in between the tackles, but I do think you could tell, you know, some of those hits that he took, it just seems like he's like 160 pounds dripping wet at times. That's the reason why you can't have him do that, you know, for a 16.
Well, there was the one on the screenplay where it broke big and it's like he's off to the races. I don't know if it was a safety or somebody in the defensive backfield. Literally just like went boom and he just like, it was like it was like playing with a kid in the thing and he just went right to the ground. And it's no knock on Tyler. Like you said, no. He's just smaller. But it is noticeable when he takes some of those hits. There's no doubt. All right, let's get to it. You mentioned Davante Adams. I don't think much needs to be said. We all know how good he is. What was your gamut of emotions last night watching MVS drop a crucial third down and then come back and have two touchdowns? Where are you on the MVS experience?
Yeah, I should know better by this point that, and I think Zach Jacobson actually brought up a great fact of this is what it is. He's maybe the most high risk, high reward, most volatile wide receiver in the NFL. The peaks are ridiculously high. The valleys are ridiculously low. There's going to be times that he lets you down in heartbreaking fashion on simple catches for first downs. And there's going to be time where he beats you downfield and converts on huge touchdown or huge plays downfield. And this is it. This is not a surprise. This shouldn't be a surprise. This is what you're going to see out of it. And I do think, and as we've talked about in the past, I think when he slots into that number three wide receiver role, and that's kind of your third option, and he can have more of a specified role rather than having to be the number two, I think everything settles down a little bit and he just kind of fits more naturally within the offense. I think anytime that he has to kind of bump up and be the number one or number two guy, I think that's where things maybe just get a little bit off and you just don't see that level of production because you expect more and it doesn't always deliver. So to be fair, I think he had two big plays. He should be, I think he deserves credit for bouncing back after the tough drop. I think Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers deserve credit for having trust in him even after that drop and sticking with him because a better, you know, or a worse man, I don't know that I would have stuck with him in that situation. Right. And then you don't get those big plays down the field. Maybe the game's totally different. So I just think this is who MVS is and take the good with the bad.
Yeah. It's funny too, because we have arrived at that point now, right? Where we saw this summer, you were there every day along with myself, where we saw how consistent he was from practice to practice. And you thought, okay, here we go. It just hasn't translated. We've seen the same up and downs, as you just mentioned, throughout the season. And I think Zach's point is spot on. This is exactly who he is. Yep. You've given him the time. You've tried to let him develop. And he has developed in areas, but the inconsistency is here to stay. And, he's bordering on coach killer because he does give you stuff that makes you want to trust him, but then he kills you in certain spots. I love the fact that we're getting huge plays and touchdowns out of the kid. But I think you are spot on in regards to when Lazard gets back, then they can cook with gas. Because I do think he's a perfect, addition as a complimentary role. And that's what kills me when people fire off their tweets in anger after a single drop, which is one play, and they try to make a manifesto out of, well, this is why the Packers' approach is incorrect, because he dropped that third down pass. It's like, no, Lazard is hurt. He's being pressed into duty. Yes, he's inconsistent. But this is part of the process of letting people develop and utilizing the talent that you have on hand, which is more than good enough. They are scoring tons of points.
And it'll be really interesting too, because you feel like Matt LaFleur in this system just really wants consistency. Let his system do the work, and he wants the consistency, whether it's out of the quarterback position, the running back position, the wide receivers. He wants to know that his players are going to be in the right spots at the right time, making the plays that are there for them when he's able to kind of scheme things up for them. So he's the antithesis of that. Aaron Rodgers has become much more consistent. Aaron Jones has become much more consistent. Obviously, Devontae is. Alan Lazard is the picture of consistency as a wide receiver. You know what you're going to get. It may not always be super sexy and flashy, but it is ridiculously consistent. And then you have MBS, which is just the wild card in any given game.
No doubt about it. The guys making it go up front, I mean, you can talk about the offensive line. I know Billy Turner's been highlighted these last couple weeks here. What about Elgton Jenkins, though? I mean, my goodness, this kid can literally play anywhere. And it's funny because we've heard the coaches say that, and we know he's done it in the past, say in college. But to see him step in an NFL game and play multiple positions a couple of times already this year, I mean, what an outstanding player. And the fact that he can slide out to left tackle, the most important spot on the offensive line, seemingly on a whim, and lock it down, it's just, you can't say enough about his versatility and his value up front.
He's a five position player along the offensive line, and he's a good five position player along the offensive line.
Crazy.
Ridiculous. I mean, it's beyond ridiculous. So a big thing that I wrote about in my recap for today was not just Jenkins, but the overall versatility along the offensive line. And even if you want to include Tyler Irvin in this as well, the fact that Billy Turner has now played right guard, right tackle, left tackle, and could probably play left guard in a pinch as well. You know, even John Runyon Jr., he's played right guard and left guard. Lucas Patrick, center, left guard, right guard. He's even played a snap at left tackle this season. Rick Wagner, left tackle, right tackle. You know, we've seen just about everyone across this offensive line have the versatility to play in a variety of different positions. All of them have held up well, save for maybe Rick Wagner at left tackle coming in cold.
I was going to say, that's the one spot probably dipped a little bit.
Tampa when they had, you know, could just pass rush to no end anyway. But outside of that one, everyone's held up well at their specific spots, regardless of where they've played. Matt LaFleur's been super adamant about wanting to get his best five out on the field. Well, it makes it a hell of a lot easier when all of them can basically play anywhere.
Do everything,
you want. You know, so how valuable is that? And then again, even going back to a guy like Tyler Irvin, he from day one of practice, his very first snap was as slot wide receiver. He practiced with the wide receivers all year. I'm sure he's been in the wide receiver meeting rooms all year. The fact that your top three running backs, I know Jones was back, but could have been out in that game, and you just take Tyler Irvin and slot him back into that running back position. And I know he's out injured now, but Josiah DeGuara, some of that fullback, tight end, H-back, you can line them up in the slot. Just the versatility of the players on this offense is ridiculous. And when you talk about drafting and building and developing a team that fits your head coach's philosophy, that's what they're talking about. It's being able to have all that versatility because, again, Matt LaFleur is going to do the work on his end to figure out plays and scheme that are going to work against opposing defenses. If you've got guys that can play all over and do what he wants you to do, you're going to see the success even when you have players missing like Green Bay has on offense all year long.
Speaking of versatility, and you bring up DeGuara, which makes me think I instantly go to the tight end group. It was interesting last night how, I'm not going to say underutilized, but they certainly weren't a big part of the game plan. And I do think that was a specific thing. Whereas last week they clearly were. I actually kind of love it that you never really know which way they're going to lean as far as which position group they think has an advantage over the opponent. Obviously when you've got Davante Adams lined up on some of these corners, you think, yeah, of course that's where you're going to lean and that's what you want. But there are going to be days when, you know, the running back group has to come to the fore, the tight end group has to come to the fore, and you never really know where they're going to attack. And even though Sternberger, I think, had one catch, I don't even know if Tonyan had one.
I think they
weren't, you know, utilized, productive, what have you. They still scored 30-plus points. This team can kill you a million different ways.
And again, just imagine when everyone's healthy at some point, hopefully. Oh. And I mean, it's going to be
the mythical everyone being healthy. Yes.
And I know, right? And, you know, I think the great thing, as you're kind of mentioning, every single game this season, Matt LaFleur's come in with something different. And, you know, save for maybe the Tampa game, where I think Tampa was maybe a step ahead, and also just give a ton of credit to their defensive talent on that side of the ball as well. But outside of that, he's had almost a perfect plan. And to your point, you have no idea. I went on a pregame show legitimately right before the game, and I said, yeah, I expect Green Bay to do a lot of two tight end stuff again and kind of utilize Jay Sternberger and Robert Tonyan the way that they did.
I thought it was going to be the Jay show. I really did. Yeah.
And nope. And to, again, that he was 1,000,000% correct. And Davante Adams was getting a ton of one-on-one. All right, that's what we're going to do. And you don't have to over, you know, try to simplify it, or you just do what's working. And I think that is also something that Matt LaFleur does incredibly well. If you're not stopping it, he's not going to get away from it. And it sounds like from Aaron Rodgers' press conference that that's something that he's really worked with Matt LaFleur on as well. When he's, you know, there's right. multiple times this year that he's mentioned, hey, come back to stuff. It's working. Come back to stuff. It's working. Those two seem to be really on the same wavelength with that right now.
Yeah, you absolutely love to see that. I'm talking to Andy Herman, Pack-A-Day Podcast. Andy, one last thing for you. Just back on the defensive side of the ball, because it's come up during the watch party last night, and then it came up again on my chat this morning, and I'd love to get your take on this, because – again, you and I were both there this summer, and we saw Josh Jackson have, I thought, a step forward as far as his play. Still a little bit inconsistent. We know he's got issues, especially down the field, grabbing guys. Still got penalized a couple times last night. But it's funny how people come to him through a certain lens of, okay, he was a higher draft pick, so I think a lot of people obviously expect more out of him. Hasn't played a whole lot. Has been pressed into service here with Kevin King being out. I think he's played pretty darn well. He's given up some plays. Most of them have been in front of him, and he's stopped it. If it has, you know, he hasn't ruptured these big gains that we certainly have seen throughout the first part of his career. But it's weird to see people going, oh, well, he's just, you know, he's just giving up all these receptions. It's like, first, of course, people are going after him because Jair's on the other side, or had been until last night, partway through the game. But it's just, I don't see a bad corner. I see a corner who's improving. I don't know. I would love to get your take on it.
I think, as always, the takes are somewhere in the middle, right? So I had literally people arguing with me on Twitter before last week that Josh Jackson was better than Kevin King and should be the starter opposite Jair Alexander, even when King is back.
Even when King is back. See, now that's, I think, a bit foolish.
So there's number one. And then on the other side, you say, well, Josh Jackson can't play at all. Why is he out on the field? And, you know, it's time to put in.
It's our home in time, right?
Exactly. And I think the logic is, again, somewhere right in the middle. I think, like you said, he's making some plays here and there. My concern with him is at the point of attack, there always seems to be some level of panic, whether it's a grab at the jersey when maybe he doesn't need to, whether the play over the middle where he had perfect coverage, he just arrives a little bit too early. And again, a pass interference play. I'm not going to knock him too hard for the roughing, you know, penalty. Yes,
it was probably. I love that play.
So I'm not going to get over after him on that.
Wait a second. I got to push back a little bit here because I do think, and that's not in the sense of like, you're absolutely correct, because there are going to be plenty of crews that call that interference penalty. But you look at the 49ers, they're fucking draped all over Devontae and not getting a call. Sure. So it's like, if I see that as a corner, I'm thinking, okay, that's the standard. That's how they're calling it tonight. So I'm going to put my hand on his hip. I am going to be draped all over him and then try and push the ball away and gets there because that's supposedly how they're calling the game. And now that doesn't dismiss it. I understand you want him to play the technique, but it is kind of frustrating if you're Josh Jackson and you see, you know, the opposing corners being draped all over Davante Adams, but then you breathe on a guy and you get called.
Yeah. And, you know, the only thing that I might say is, you know, the refs do their homework sometimes too. And
he started to get
a reputation for being a little bit of a handsy guy and, you know, getting some of these calls. So who knows? Again, I'm somewhere in the middle. I'm personally maybe lower on Josh Jackson than I think maybe you are, but I still think there's opportunity there. I think there's talent there. And I don't think, regardless of anything, I don't think he's somebody that being out there is hurting the team to any extent where you need to go, all right, the Josh Jackson experiment needs to be over. He is a solid to maybe slightly below average corner that's going to get beat from time to time. And as a number four corner in this league is probably a luxury to have, because probably most teams don't have a number four corner with the talent and, you know, really what we've seen out of Josh Jackson when he's needed to step in over the course of the last few weeks.
I can agree with that. All right. I've been talking to Andy Herman from Pack-A-Day Podcast. Andy, thank you so much. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.
Hey, can't wait. Thanks so much, Aaron.